Hello, I'm Emily Forstner.
And I'm Tiana Lee.
Today on Radio Free Palmer, we're talking about something that's on everybody's mind right now. Healthcare.
Oh, yeah, healthcare.
Tiana, you and I actually have more in common than one would think. We both are equidistant to aging out of our current health insurance.
Right. In 6 years, I'm aging out of my parents' insurance and aging into my own private insurance dilemma.
And in 6 short years, I'm aging out of my private insurance and aging into Medicare.
We're both going to be in a very different situation in the near future, one that neither of us knows very much about at this time. But we both want the same thing in the end, quality care and lower cost.
Exactly. Which brought us to the question in front of us today. What does this hot button issue in Alaska's midterm elections, healthcare, look like in the MATSU? And what should our conversation be about with our candidates? Oh, you make me wanna zip.
That's a massive question, Emily.
Massive? Yes. And it took quite a bit of wrestling with that topic to get it narrowed down to something manageable.
When we first got together to figure this out, we started with the MATSU Health Foundation to get an answer to what healthcare in the MATSU encompassed.
And we learned a lot. For instance, I didn't know that the MATSU Health Foundation owned 35% of the MATSU Regional Hospital as a nonprofit entity. It's a model unique to the nation. And when the original Valley Hospital, a nonprofit, decided to reorganize as a for-profit hospital, the foundation was created as a way to keep that hospital focused on a healthy MATSU community and not just hospital care, working toward the mission of healthy aging, healthy minds, and healthy foundations for families. And the success of our MATSU Health Foundation is actually becoming a national model for joint venture ownership across the nation.
They are much more than that, though. The MATSU Health Foundation is the second largest grant provider in the state next to the Rasmussen Foundation. It gave out $7 million last year in grants across the MATSU.
Wow, second to the Rasmussen Foundation. That's impressive. So when we called Elizabeth on the phone, one of the things she talked about were the three aims of the MATSU Health Foundation across the valley.
So we are really, we're at the apex of health reform because we co-own an acute care hospital. And the triple aim has three parts to it. We've built our whole strategic plan at the MATSU Health Foundation around the triple aim, which is number one, you want to improve the health of the population, and that goes to your, care of health piece. The other two parts of the triple aim are to improve the patient experience of care and quality of care, and to reduce the per capita cost of health care. And both those other two prongs are related to health care. And what is unique about the MATSU Health Foundation is we care about all three parts of that.
I didn't know the foundation did so much. It serves as a watchdog, it looks like, for healthcare in the valley, as well as a support system. And I was blind to all the organizations and the comprehensive reports the foundation supports, the initiatives and collaborative projects. I went on their website, and I couldn't believe all that they supported. There's Thrive. There's Rock. No More MATSU. Connect MATSU. Alaska After School Network. Breathe Free Alaska, Alaska Resilience Initiative, the MATSU Opioid Task Force, and the Workforce Development. This foundation of ours generates an extensive, huge database of health factors, statistics, and healthy lives indicators all across the valley.
I would agree, Emily, but the foundation is a great asset to the valley, and we are lucky to have them. One common theme I heard while talking with the foundation director, Elizabeth Ripley, on the phone was the importance of behavioral health on a community's overall health care. The chicken and the egg idea, healthy lives come before healthy bodies.
The truth is we're whole people, and we all have positive and negative mental health days. Any one of us, like you just said, could have significant challenges in our lives and our future, and the physical health is entwined with the mental health. And so we need to design a system that pays for treatment for mental health and substance use disorders. And our community here in Manitou has told us the number one issue in our community that they're concerned about is alcohol and substance use disorders.
I liked how Elizabeth talked about the whole person, but she also mentioned to us healthcare in terms of upstream, forward-looking care, and downstream care, treatment. So I think it's ironic that with the emphasis of whole person and upstream care, the successful life skill course taught at PHS last year was cut due to lack of funding and loss of staff.
Well, Tiana, that's what we call one step forward, two steps back. Elizabeth, though, in her defense, understood that after you talked about Palmer, and she added this thought.
We will have to see cuts because this is unsustainable in terms of what we're putting into the cost of healthcare. What we need to do is redirect those dollars appropriately so that you, no matter what your age or your age group or your demographic, you get more value out of what you're spending. And we as a collective community get more value for the amount of money that we're spending. So Alaska spends roughly $8.25 billion a year on healthcare.
For 750,000 people. Alaska's healthcare costs are the most expensive
in the world.
You know, Tiana, I thought one of the more interesting points that Ms. Ripley brought up is the Health Foundation's move toward comprehensive care coordination and the role of the primary care physician.
Which is how our focus then went toward the healthy lives end of the healthcare topic. Our two perspectives of healthcare, the young adult and the
more mature adult.
Maybe we needed to discover more about the behavioral healthcare system to evaluate the overall health of our community before we dug into the behemoth beast of healthcare in general.
So, we talked with Heather Lee, an adolescent behavioral health counselor at Ptarmigan Pediatrics, about her experience and her viewpoints on mental health in the Valley.
Right. Heather talked about the importance of coordinated care between physician and counselor.
So today we're going to talk to Heather about the behavioral care that's involved with healthcare in our community. Welcome, Heather.
Thank you.
We talked with Heather for quite a while, and it wasn't long before the term ACEs came into the conversation. Can you dig a little deeper on ACE? It's
Adverse Childhood Experience.
Adverse Childhood Experience.
And basically, there was a study done that initially just started to they initiated the study because they started to recognize when they were looking at some physical health outcomes, when they looked at the profile, they often found that there was some adverse experience early on in the individual's life. So they would look at sort of diabetes or obesity or some health outcomes, but they would look back and see that, oh, this person had a divorce, an incarcerated parent, some sort of physical or emotional neglect. And they found that there was a really clear correlation between the number of adverse experiences that they had had and their future physical health.
I've heard some candidates for this August primary say that healthcare is the number one concern for Alaskans. If behavioral health is part of that concern, the double-edged sword, which comes first. How would you summarize the healthcare issue of behavioral health?
I would say that the single most important thing that needs to happen in order to make behavioral health a part of the solution is to make access a priority.
And access includes affordability?
Means affordability. It means awareness. It means reducing the stigma. And just make it a priority because behavioral health is an essential part of our physical well-being. And that translates into an essential part of our community's health as a whole. I think the biggest challenge, and I have lots of empathy for a primary care provider, is a person may be coming in for a physical ailment. The primary care provider sees that there's something else going on, but it's definitely difficult to broach that subject with somebody who really just wants the pill that's going to treat the physical ailment and then everything will be fine. And to be able to say, hey, you know, what else is going on here? Maybe there's some other stuff that we could look at that would actually give you longer term relief.
Which goes along with that recent study that's been published that when you keep your primary care provider, you spend less And you're healthier.
Absolutely.
Because somebody knows you.
Because there's somebody knows you and can look at the whole picture.
The whole relationship.
And our commitment from where we're from is that we communicate back to the primary caregiver what happened. If they referred to us, we will communicate back to them and say, we saw your client. Because oftentimes, primary care providers will refer off to specialists or behavioral health, and they never know what happens.
Well, by the end of our conversation with Heather Lee, we knew more about where we could find information about our healthcare system in the Valley through the Health Foundation, and the fact that a healthy community encourages healthy bodies for a lifetime, beginning with childhood, with Heather Lee. And we found this common theme starting to emerge, something about coordinated care and primary care.
Right. It became apparent that the double-edged sword of needing quality care and affordable care pointed at coordinated and primary care. So we asked Matsu Borough Assemblywoman Dr. Barb Doty to the station and talked with her about coordinated and integrated care.
And by now, Tiana, I have to tell you, the more I learned, the less I seem to know.
True that. But Dr. Doty brought some clarity to the overall picture by punctuating an issue we hadn't considered before, simply the number of primary care physicians available. Bring 'em out, bring 'em out, hey! Bring 'em out, bring 'em out. Dr. Doty has been a family practice physician for 30 years in the Valley, an educator and professor for the Medical Whammy Program in Alaska, and now also an elected assemblywoman of the Matsu Borough. She let us know that a recent study through the McDowell Group shows a 45% increase in the 20 to 24-year-olds in the Valley.
But a 55% increase in my age group.
I thought that my age group would see doctors more than your age group, actually, Emily.
Wrong again, Tiana.
Right.
I don't see that the 18 to 24-year-olds engage that much in a continuity practice.
Okay.
They do more episodic practice, so they may, you know, need a particular service like a school or sports physical or a pre-college physical, or they, have a tonsillitis or some kind of an acute illness, and then they tend to stop into their urgent cares.
But in the end, Tiana, the preferred first visit is always with that primary care physician. Elizabeth Ripley told us earlier that the Health Foundation has a goal to have 15% more primary care physicians in the Valley by 2025. So we decided to dig a little deeper on this primary care practitioner issue. So let's dig a little deeper into this primary care provider.
Okay.
And research says around, I believe, through Starfield.
Barbara Starfield.
And I think as early as the 60s, she researched and recorded a trend where we were moving away from primary care into specialists.
Mm-hmm.
And her research says, I think the exact words from Starfield was that we are marketing technology.
Correct.
And so our procedures are where we go for our medical, we think that's medical care, and that's where the cost is. So what is the difference between the primary care and the specialist?
So I think of it in terms of caring for your automobile, just as a comparison. You take your car in, if it's a new car, you're mostly going to go in for maintenance, but you realize that if you don't do the maintenance, that part that you didn't pay attention to is going to break down. When the part breaks down, you get to go to the dealership and pay a lot for that part. So the dealership provides the specialty care, and the basic maintenance is provided by primary care.
But Emily, insurance companies' reimbursement schedules pay out for specialist procedures at a higher rate than primary care office visits. So why wouldn't it make sense to have more specialists than primary care physicians?
Ah, precisely, Watson. However, the guidelines for the number of primary care physicians versus specialists, according to a Merritt Hawkins report, is 30 per 100,000 population and 8 specialists, or a 75-25% split between the two practices. It's not so much that we don't have enough primary care physicians, it's the ratio. In the Matsu, and really across the nation, that ratio is flipped. We have about 70% specialists and 30% primary care. Primary care includes these general practitioners, family practitioners like Dr. Doty, internists, and pediatricians, like who your mom works for.
Well, in 2014, the ratio of MATSU primary care providers was one physician to 2,083 persons. For all years reported, the MATSU ratio was poorer than the state and the nation, 90th percentile rate.
Well, I stand corrected.
What can we do about this money problem?
There's several little things we have to do, but we need to transform our payment system so that we're paying to maintain health and not paying to treat disease. And then we need to support the people that are doing chronic disease management to optimize the care that they're collaborating with their patients to do that care. I can't tell you how to manage your diet, but I can give you guidelines and follow through, and I can celebrate your successes and address your failures, which we all have, and figure out new methods of addressing those things. That's called continuity.
The continuity of care, which focuses on prevention and a team approach to health, is referenced several times by both Elizabeth Ripley and Dr. Doty. So why so many specialists? Well, actually, Tiana, a specialist in Alaska, has the capacity to make up to 5 times more than the primary care physician.
5 times?
Yes. Like the difference between $250,000 on average to $1.2
million. Oh.
Makes you want to be a primary care physician, doesn't it? Right now, we pay 80% of all our medical costs to specialists, to 20% general care, when that pyramid really should be reversed.
Well, where does this leave the consumer?
Besides being broke?
And how did a human right, such as healthcare, become a financial commodity so that I had to behave as a consumer?
Wait, I want to go delve into a little bit more about this critical thinking regarding the patient. They come into you much more involved in their diagnoses because, mm-hmm. you know, I have the internet, I'm a doctor too. Mm-hmm. But how well versed are they on this idea that we've been marketed to specialists, that insurance reimburses procedures more than observation and general diagnoses, on continuity of care? I mean, if we don't know about that, I'm still going to read the internet and I'm going to go to my specialist with just that one problem because I don't even know if there's a generalist in the community that will take me anymore.
So I guess my answer to that is, do you want a yes-no answer or an educated answer?
Let's try educated.
Okay. So the difference between, you know, what's this rash on my arm is, and the yes-no answer is, it is not a bacterial infection, okay? Didn't tell you what it is, it just told you what it wasn't. You went to the skin specialist who said it's not that. Then you have to go back
right.
and find out what else is there. If you want an educated answer, the question might be answered it this way. For these reasons, I don't think that that's an acute infection. It does not appear to be a cancer. This is what I would look for in a cancer. And here's what we can do to monitor it and what we can do for a further workup if the answer is that it's not better after we do this particular therapy.
The consumer is left having to be very knowledgeable on all fronts, not just about the prescriptions advertised on television that they now desperately need and their own internet WebMD diagnosis, but also in the type of care they really want, which I would think would be a primary care physician for that educated type answer Dr. Doty talked about.
The primary care provider's practice, although preferred for many reasons, runs on an average of a 3% profit margin. That, and the fact that Medicare reimburses a smaller percentage than most insurance plans, is why a general practice only takes 30% of their practice's Medicare. Many don't even take new older patients at all.
Ouch. So just consider this. As you age out of your parents' plan, you have to find the right primary care practitioner. On the other hand, I'm just hoping to find one at all. and I'm the fastest growing age group in town.
Okay, I want to consider the notion that healthcare is a human right. You mentioned that earlier, Emily.
I did, and I asked Dr. Doty that same question.
The people campaigning right now are saying that healthcare is number one issue. And all this time, I thought it was PFD. Oh, well. Wrong again. It's healthcare. And they say it's a human right. Well, if healthcare is a human right, how has it become a commodity where it's a consumer conversation?
Well, when in my freshman year of college, many, many years ago, I wrote a paper about healthcare as a human right. And guess who the best reference was for that? It was Robert Kennedy. You know, at that time, there was a lot of discussion about, is healthcare a right? His take was, yes, it is. If you look at the statutes for the state of Alaska, what is one of the obligations to provide as a state is to provide the health and well-being of the population, right?
Yes.
So,
and our Constitution is lauded across the nation as one of the best.
Mm-hmm. So we should be providing for the health and well-being, and health is the first part of that. But health can be provided in a lot of different ways. I mean, obviously, there's all kinds of resources that lead to health. And mental health, people who are in poverty or poorly educated may have more social determinants that affect their health. I mean, it's really a population question, not just a you and your physician question. It needs to be a team, and it needs to be a community focus.
That was then. This is now. What does the future for us look like?
I think you have to ask the question about where's healthcare going? And it's really exciting because people have access to more health information. And as the online information is, it will help direct your care a little bit more. But if you look at cost benefit, doing those simple wellness visits, knowing that your blood pressure is okay, looking at your trends over time, just like you would with taking your car in to get the oil changed, that's gonna, in the long run, cost you less. Because there's always copays. Until we change our healthcare system into a healthcare system instead of a health treatment system, it's always gonna be more expensive to treat the problem than it is gonna be to maintain the health. And so my encouragement is to learn how to live a healthy lifestyle. And have an expert consultant to help you with that. That most likely is going to be someone that you have a relationship over time. And in the healthcare profession, you're going to get the best bang for your buck by someone that's in primary care.
The issue of a shortage of primary care providers that Dr. Doty brought to the table really got us thinking about the specific primary care physicians that we have in the MATSU and their experiences in providing care for the Valley residents. So we talked to yet another doctor on the front line, Dr. Jill Valerius, a certified functional medicine practitioner.
Dr. Valerius offered us a different insight into the world of primary care. And the idea of a system created outside the current broken one we're familiar with today.
So Jill, the world is changing, and healthcare is a major priority issue in the midterm elections and for all Americans. How would you describe the state of our healthcare?
I think currently our state of healthcare is a bit of a misnomer because what we have at present is more of a sick care system, and unfortunately it's not focused on creating health. And that's the area we need to change. Insurance isn't about creating health for any one of us. It's focused on keeping you in a sick system, driven by they themselves, the insurance companies, pharmacy. And in order for us to really move forward and create health for each of us, we're going to have to create a new way, unfortunately, outside of the system, or maybe fortunately outside of the system. I think it's pretty clear to everybody that our system right now costs way too much money. We're going broke in terms of healthcare in our country. And until we really start to focus on health, on food quality, on movement, and all of those things, and managing stress for each of us, we are going to stay stuck in this current system until we change it. And I think right now it's going to have to be a grassroots, more movement, like some of us as providers and lots of patients are going to have to just demand and create something different.
In her call to action, Dr. Valerius went on to discuss the conundrum of the necessary volume of patients a sole provider requires to stay in business and the quality of care they want to and could provide.
So a provider, you go to an average provider's office and you go within your insurance. So, you know, you get your 7 to 15 minutes. That's your cost of care. But I will argue with you, if you're seeing anyone and they're spending 7 to 15 minutes with you, unless your right ear hurts and that's the only problem, your quality of care is not good. It's good for one discrete, minute issue, but that's not helping you create health. That's an urgent care visit. So I would say that they're independent but tied in our current system, when the only way for your primary care provider to make money is to see a lot of people. The qualities. You can't have high volume and quality in the same equation.
Tiana, I was convinced that the number of primary care physicians was the answer to our problem. But Dr. Valerius returned us to that behemoth we originally took on at the beginning. Only 60% of the Valley adults have a usual primary care provider, far below the 83% goal of the Mat-Su Health Foundation. And almost 20% of the Valley doesn't have primary care at all due to cost. But for Jill, the case was clear. The problem? Insurance and prescriptions. Do you think this health treatment versus health care, this sick care system that we have, do you think that can be legislated away? Or what do you mean by this grassroots?
I don't think it could be legislated away. Current ideas amongst administration is transparency and all of these things. But the problem right now is pharmacy and insurance are in charge of the whole system.
So Jill, Dr. Valerius, talked about a brand new paradigm of direct primary care and MediShares.
I know. The idea kind of blows my mind.
They set the fees. Pharmacy decides how much any individual pharmacy is going to pay wholesale for a drug, and then they decide how much insurance is going to reimburse. You know, so it's this whole corrupt system. And so from a grassroots standpoint, there's certain things like MediShares, that kind of stuff right now, like Liberty Mutual. There's going to be a new one coming on called New Health, and that's going to be a functional medicine MediShare. And I think really, like, right now for my patients that don't have current, you know, healthcare through an employer and that kind of thing, I actually suggest them to go to these kind of things where there's more personal responsibility. Of course, these organizations can also not qualify somebody or charge more, but it never is to the extent of Blue Cross or Aetna or Cigna or one of these major insurers. The other cool thing about using them, there's no in or out of network. And that whole deal in an insurance world is a scam. And it's a cost control in the sense that it is a payment control on physicians.
Direct primary care, like what Dr. Valerius was talking about, puts the emphasis on primary care and that continuity of care rather than episodic care Dr. Doty described that my age group uses. With direct primary care, a patient pays a monthly bill, like a phone bill, and is provided regular checkups, same day or next day appointments, and medical labs and certain medications at wholesale cost. These encourage people to have and use their primary care provider. Then, in addition to direct primary care packages, you would want a low premium, high deductible for those catastrophic events.
Oh, the ones that will bankrupt us?
Yeah, and that's the idea behind direct primary care packages. You need both, but Dr. Valerius's point is that people are beginning to work around our current system with innovative ideas like that, or the MediShare idea, where all payments go into a pool. That idea requires a large population to support, something Alaska just doesn't have.
Not at least on its own. You know, Tiana, you know quite a bit for such a young woman.
Well, I have to. Dr. Valerius is right. Something has to change, and I guess that begins with me.
Oh, I think that's a song.
I don't think I'm old enough for that reference.
You know, you look at the bigger thing, like people are going to go like, well, if we don't need all these drugs, those are jobs lost, or that's, you know, there's always going to be, it's such a massive shift that's the part where you go, can we change the system, or do we need to like...
Erase it.
Seriously, like just say, okay, system's going left down that road. We got to take a right here. We have to create a new system
to make the Band-Aid off.
Yep.
And start again.
Make the old system obsolete. Another one bites the dust.
And so there we have it.
A beginning. I do see where my entry point in 6 years isn't in just finding an insurance plan, but being aware of my own healthy choices and the choices of my community, wherever that may be, makes to keep itself healthy.
And I see that Medicare isn't my beast, but rather the exact same issue that you face. Not the insurance plan as much as my own personal responsibility to keep my costs down, God forbid, and the creeks don't rise, but also to be involved in those healthy choices with my primary care provider and watch over the behavior of my valley overall.
It would be much easier if it were just about premiums and deductibles.
Oh, indeed. But now we have a fresh bank of questions for the candidates that will come out of the primary. First one I would ask, what ideas do you have to turn the pyramid of specialists versus primary care right side up and to increase the number of primary care providers overall?
Another question, what ideas do you have about state health authorities to combat the inflated fee schedules set by insurance companies?
And what plans do you have to help improve the continuity and communication of care between all of our providers?
And what do you think about our future?
Thanks for listening. And Tiana is back to school this week in the University of Vermont. But the issue of health care and its influence on the midterm elections isn't on her plane. We will continue to explore health care together, starting with the specialists. We can't legislate this issue away or fix it that easily, but we will work to discover what the voters should be asking. So join us after the fair for an interview with a Valley specialist and their viewpoint on healthcare, its quality, its cost, and its future.